Let's do a quick heads up on the next few weeks. Next week I'm speaking again, well, we'll see where we get to. I thought I knew what I was going to speak on for a short series at the moment, but that's not working out. Doesn't really matter too much why, but it's not that the preparation's not going in, it's just not coming out the other end. I'm speaking next week, and then the week after that we have Thanksgiving for the youngest, Murray, and there'll be a lot of visitors around there, so I should imagine we'll talk about something that it's always a good chance to remind ourselves of the particular role of kids within the community. The week after that, we've got two interviews going down as the talk session. One will be an extended interview with Chiquita, which will be done by Philippa, and then we're going to talk to Rolf as he wanted a chance to reflect publicly, and it's a good idea, on his trials and tribulations while he was travelling just recently. And that's the 12th. The 19th, we've got a visitor from Madison in Wisconsin, who I mentioned to you last time I was up, and that's Elliot Polash, a friend of Dave Day's. I've met him, and his daughter is now based in the UK, so he and his wife are going to be over. It'd be interesting to have somebody coming from his particular angle. Now, that's that. This morning, I'm going to be speaking from a psalm. One of the goals I've got in my life is to try and get into the Book of Psalms. I'm not good at psalms. I don't know many of them. I haven't spent much time reading them through. What happened was this, that Ian wasn't able to get to the prayer meeting on Wednesday, but being the conscientious man that he is, he sent me a set of briefing notes as to some themes and things, and he'd picked up on a particular sentence out of a psalm, which was this sentence: as we have heard, so have we seen. Actually, it's not a whole sentence, and that was a really good stimulus for us on Wednesday evening. But the consequence of that was that I went home thinking about the whole psalm. And that started to interpose itself on what I was already preparing. And so by the time it got to Friday morning, instead of finalising my notes, I had three sheets in front of me. And I was preparing three different talks. And it wasn't until Saturday afternoon I thought, well, right or wrong, whether this is absolutely the word for today, I know that it can't do any harm at all to talk about the fact that the Lord is great. Well, great is the Lord. I had a song to go with it as well, but I won't sing it to you this morning. I draw my songs from much greater spread of time than Rosie does, because almost every song she chooses, I can tell you exactly where I was in the early 1980s when I was introduced to it. That's not quite true. Some of them are a bit earlier than that, but they're songs from Rosie's childhood that that we get to sing when she leads. I suppose that's true of most of us. But before I get into this, before I dig into this and ask you some questions, get you to think a little bit and reflect, let me read to you a whole psalm, Psalm 48. We're not going to concentrate on all of it, but this is a song that starts off, "Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, his holy mountain. Beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth, like the heights of Zaphon, is Mount Zion, the city of the great king. God is in her citadels. He has shown himself to be her fortress. When the kings joined forces, when they advanced together, they saw her and were astounded. They fled in terror. Trembling seized them there, pain like that of a woman in labor. You destroyed them like ships of Tarshish, shattered by an east wind. As we've heard, so we have seen in the city of the Lord Almighty, in the city of our God. God makes her secure forever. Within your temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Like your name, O God, God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments. Walk about Zion. Go round her, count her towers. Consider well her ramparts, view her citadels, that you may tell of them to the next generation. For this God is our God for ever and ever. He will be our guide even to the end. Well, the first thing that we need to do this morning, as in looking at this psalm, looking at lots of psalms, is that we've got to become aware of distance. Right? That it doesn't immediately translate to where we are. Okay? Let me just give you one example. City, village. For us, what is pleasanter, what is most comfortable? We think of the village as being the nice place to be, the city as being the smelly place, the more violent place, the more difficult place. You've got to reverse that if you read this. The city was the place where you were safe. The villages were the places where you were likely to be attacked, where you were not safe at all. In fact, the new thing going on at this time was building cities. King David, and I've said this before because it's one of the themes that fascinates me, was a great urbaniser. He brought people into cities where they would be safe, where they wouldn't be attacked. And so you get here, it talks about ramparts and citadels. You can remember when you were doing history at school, you talked about the Normans and Mott and Bailey castles. Yeah, the hill that you put a castle on, and the poor people lived outside, the rich people lived inside. The rich people got the greater resources and were safe, poorer people didn't. Very little has changed. There were places where the gates would open, the gates would stay open during the day, they would be closed and you would be safe at night. So that's the way that people are thinking, very different to us, thinking of not wanting to be in the city. You know, I go back to Dagenham, which is where my parents live, about once every 2 weeks at the moment to see them, spend some time with them. And I'm aware of some adjustments that I make when I'm there. Right? I feel reasonably safe in that environment. I certainly don't know of anywhere in Dagenham or indeed in East London that I wouldn't walk happily of an evening. But I am conscious of the fact that I've got my phone out of my pocket and I'm on my phone at that time. Wouldn't think about that if I was walking around here. I'm conscious of the fact that there's a lot more angry and upset people around in that particular city environment. So when I'm reading Psalms and they start talking about the city of God, I've got to do some reversing. So I'm thinking about the city as a safe place. Mount Zion, of course, is a figure of speech that's used to talk about Jerusalem as well. Now, I want to mention one more problem out of the text here, just because it's fun, and then we're going to leave it, and I'm going to ask you to sort of respond, talk to one another a bit about it. You have a look at in the second verse. It's talking about the city of God here. It says, beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth, like the heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion. Now, the NIV is really unusual here. It's the only translation that does this. It's very unusual for the NIV to be unusual. It normally goes the way of all flesh. But what happens here is a problem with the word. Because I don't know whether you know, but in the Old Testament, a lot of the meanings we have to guess at. Okay, it's a long, long way away. And while all the important things are close, you know, we can get to it, there are lots of things where it looks as though, and I've been part sometimes of meetings where scholars have been talking about this. I've only been the person taking the notes, not doing, not contributing to it. But they've been saying, on one hand it could mean this, and on the other hand it could mean this, and you know jolly well that in the next couple of years somebody else is going to come up with another way of looking at it at all. But the problem is this, that the word there is the north. Okay? Is Mount Zion in the north? Now, that's a very strange thing to say, because if you're thinking about Israel and Judah, Mount Zion is in the south. Okay? So people scratch their heads and think about this, and then they realise that the word north also is the name of a mountain which was Zaphon. Okay, it's a Canaanite mountain, very big, it's sort of mythical mountain, but then the mythical name was like Mount Olympus, which started off as a myth and then got labelled as a real mountain. And so people have put that particular cast on it, and it makes sense in that way, it makes sense in the other way. The Psalms are very distant from us. But here's my first question. What might the difficulties have been that made people in the time of the Psalms want to say the Lord is great? Put your heads together in twos and threes. What was the need that they were addressing when they said the Lord is great? Okay? You have 3-4 minutes. Why were they... What was the specific? What were they saying? Okay, how have you got on? What were the issues? Why? What were they addressing?
Security issues.
Security issues. Just expand on that a bit for us, Roy.
They're surrounded by enemies.
Yeah. Surrounded by enemies, nations, raiding parties, all sorts of people. One of the reasons why violence is such a big theme is that life was so violent. You know, what was the reason of why it was a great thing to have a big family, and particularly to have sons? You could always win an argument. Yeah? That's what it says in Psalm 127. Some of you are looking at me like I'm being stupid. As it say, children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Now, my feeling is that that's a bad translation there, because the word is sons. Most often sons includes daughters, but clearly on this occasion it doesn't, right? Here, because like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. You have more sons, you could protect yourself better. That was the context. Okay. What was I just saying? So security, yeah, we're saying security issues. What else? Sorry? Survival. How do you differentiate that?
Well, I was thinking about
crops. Crops, yeah.
The harvest payout.
Okay. Yep. So most people were subsistence farmers. Okay. They had variable taxes. I was watching a program recently, and they were talking about the what they called the hunger months, January, February, March. Until relatively recently, even in the UK, people would think in those sort of terms, when all the stuff you'd stored had been eaten. and you were hoping that the things you'd sorted away had not gone rotten, so that you'd got something to survive. So, survival, yeah, security, survival, what else?
There's a sort of thing, Dave, of kind of every hill would have had its kind of worship centre. Mm. There were all different types of gods, so it's kind of like a multiplicity of gods.
So there was religion. Let's just broaden this out to worship. That was another issue there. Anything else? I think we've probably got the main ones.
What about sort of the urbanisation? Because that was a huge change, wasn't it, for people?
Yeah.
Coming together, and it was a massive project, building and...
So there was a need for a PR job to be done. I think you're right there that, possibly taxes had gone up, people were having to pay, having to contribute, and the Lord is in Mount Zion, right? So you contribute to the building fund, yeah. So I'm going to put local politics in there. Doesn't sound very spiritual, does it? But we'll sort of leave that one for a bit. But I'm sure it was a factor. Any more? Move on a bit. If not.
The other things that are common to even to this day, but things like relationships with other people. If you're urbanising and things are becoming more, you know, there is more capacity for tension, but the things that worry all of us, you know, like our relationships with our parents, our kids, and our peers, and neighbours, getting along and having to say God is great over those, because they're not always.
Okay, that's an interesting issue, which we should really not go in. Those of you who've done any sociology at all will understand the principle of voluntary association, of moving from just having your family and immediate people around you who you have to get on with. One of the products of urbanisation is the development of voluntary associations, and there I will stop, having slept through 2 years of West African sociology, which was always between 3 and 5 on a Monday afternoon. A terrible, terrible time to do that. But voluntary, the whole principle of choosing who you mixed with, choosing what you picked up, choosing what you thought about. And of course, Sue makes the point that at some point we've got to close the gap, because distancing ourselves from what happened then is all very well, but we've got to find out how it connects with where we are. So, the first time this happens, the first time we get grace is the Lord, is in Psalm 48. Now, I thought there were going to be tons of references to this. There are lots of references to the greatness of God, but there are very few times in Psalms where you get this phrase, the Lord is great, or great is the Lord. It doesn't occur very often. First time is this: great is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, his holy mountain. Beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. Like the heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion of the city of the great king. Shall I sing the song to you? No, I won't. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great king above all. So, the issues were security, survival, religious worship, local political concerns, we'll add in relationships. So, here are the issues. The response to them is rational praise. Right? Rational praise. Praise and worship which concentrates on the facts of God. So it illustrates the point that when we come before God, our first goal as we worship him is to remind ourselves of who God is and what he's like. Okay? Now, part of the problem, of course, for us with the 1980s onwards with our music, bear in mind that some of the songs that we were singing this morning came out of that particular era where people started to talk in terms of the great worship experience, okay, where worship got consumerized and it became a product that you buy into. Worship isn't there primarily for us to have an experience, it's there for us to give glory to God, right? But part of that is that you got a heavier and heavier experience influence from rock music, which is not bad. There's always been a reference from secular music. But John Wimber, who was a real key innovator in music with the Vineyard churches during that period, had previously had a day job. Anybody know what his day job was?
Righteous Brothers.
Yeah, well, he was the manager of the Righteous Brothers. That kind of feel of music came in, which inevitably becomes me-centred. Right? It's interesting how we buy into music, don't we? We buy into military music, or we buy into particular styles of music, and it's still true that Christian music is dominated by soft rock, folk rock from the 70s and on into the 80s, and that becomes our sort of reserve position. Now, somehow we've got to watch that we don't fall down that hole of worshipping God being actually about worshipping me. Yeah? Me and my problems. The reason for this is not that God isn't interested in addressing our problems, but if we start there, we're stuffed. Because we end up just thinking about why our life is difficult. Okay, so that's the next time. Big gap, isn't it, between Psalm 48 and Psalm 95. I'm going to jump around a bit and then go backwards. Here's another one. The Lord reigns, let the nations tremble. He sits enthroned between the cherubim. Nobody knows what cherubim were. They certainly weren't cherubs. They were probably very scary, but they were the sort of things that were a cross between something out of In the Night Garden and a horror flick. You know, sort of, there's somewhere there, there's this sort of odd picture that you get. Let the earth shake. Great is the Lord in Zion. He is exalted over all the nations. So, here's the psalm writer in this position. Which one of the issues that we've identified is being focused on here?
Security.
Sorry?
The security one.
It's the security one in which particular way?
All the nations.
It's the nations. So here people are thinking in terms of here's our nation, here are the other nations. God is in control in world politics. Yeah? Okay, let's close the gap here for a moment. How does it help us if we are declaring the Lord is great when we're addressing political issues? Do you address political issues? Do you watch the news? Yeah? How does it help?
Well, the North Korea situation.
Yeah.
Something completely out of our control. And it's the same thing. So,
yeah.
So
we've got, we've actually got the threats that occur around. And you know, there are times when these things grab hold of you, where they can become a source of fear. I remember on one occasion, and it makes me think of this in the light of the Boston bombing, where for a whole week I had the front coach of the District Line train to myself going to work, because this was during the IRA times, and they'd found a guy with a bomb on a District Line train in the front coach, and I suppose a bit of bravado, really, but also I liked having the coach to myself and somewhere to sit at 7:30 in the morning on the underground and a chance to worship on my own and sing my song, which I'm not going to sing to you this morning. In there, just one or two. I remember a few days later, there was a guy who was a little, and excuse me being involved in racial stereotyping, but he was sort of somewhat elfy, and you could have imagined him sitting on a toadstool, and a small bearded man with his collar up got on the train with a box which had got Guinness written on the side, and you could see the whole attention of the carriage was addressed to him, and you could hear the sigh of relief when he got off the train he picked the box up and took it with him. But those things, okay, they're all right to joke about at distance. But when you're working just down the road from where the bombs have gone off, knowing that God is great and that ultimately he's in control, even if we're in a warfare situation, is hugely valuable. So, if you're watching the news, have a psalm in your head. The Lord is great. He sits enthroned between the cherubim. Great is the Lord in Zion. He is exalted over all the nations. And that's our nation and our politics and our situations, as well as those who as well as those nations that we consider somewhat odd and liable to go off like a firecracker in any direction. Okay, let's have another one here. Look at this other one, because I know this is this raises real problematic issues for us, particularly with people who are interested in the Christian faith. Okay. I know that the Lord is great, that our Lord is greater than all gods. We'll come back to that phrase. The Lord does whatever pleases him in the heavens and the earth, in the seas and all their depths. What's that addressing? It's addressing worship in the first. We come back to that bit, and you're dead right, is there. But what about that second part?
Sounds a bit like fatalism to me.
Bit like fatalism.
We can't control what goes on, it's all God's.
But God can, yeah.
So survival.
It is about survival, isn't it? It's about God's power in the natural sphere. And you probably have had conversations with friends who are reasonable inquirers. You've found it difficult to give answers. I've stood while they've been digging people out of an earthquake in Italy. It shaped my thinking. It led to me asking questions about what this means. The Lord does whatever he pleases in the heavens and the earth. Earthquakes come from God? The proximate cause? Ultimate cause? How do we handle that? I'm not going to try and resolve that this morning, but it's a big issue. I think there are useful ways of thinking about it. But how do you get your head around that one? Have you ever been asked about that? If you haven't, provoke the discussion with friends at work and say, look, how do you cope with this idea? Could you become? Would this be a barrier for you to becoming a Christian? Would it be a barrier for you to finding faith if you couldn't understand this? Is this a real question for you? When we see tsunamis, when we have that horrible phrase in insurance, an act of God, yeah? That is a problem. Now, these guys seem to be able to cope with it rather more easily than we can. And I wonder whether that's something to do with our feeling that we can control everything. Yeah? There's nothing that's outside of our control. If it's going to happen, we take insurance against it. You know, people build houses on floodplains and then expect it to be possible to control the water coming in. We go and build houses which are inappropriate for earthquake areas. I'm not saying that's the only explanation, but these control things seem to be pretty big. Somebody lets off a bomb in the middle of a city, everything is thrown up in horror, 3 people killed. Now, there's a feeling about control going on there, but I think it's true that 85 people a day are shot in the USA. 3 more people there. The reason, of course, those things are significant is that this was in a place which was supposed to be safe. This wasn't in a place where people who are likely to get shot live. Yeah? So think about that. Think about control. If you're into really mind-expanding things, I'd really like to do a session sometimes on consumerism. because consumerism is not so much about money, it's about being able to control stuff. And we'll come to that. Right, next one, stream of consciousness here. What's going on here? Declare his glory among the nations, you've got his marvellous deeds among all peoples. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. What's the focus here? It's religion, isn't it? So, in an environment where people are less and less religious, what are the equivalent things that press in to our situation today? What are today's idols?
Celebrity.
Sorry?
Materialism.
Materialism.
Celebrity.
Celebrity.
Science.
Sorry?
Science.
Science.
Beauty. Physical beauty.
Yeah, beauty.
Sport.
Sorry?
Sport.
Sport, yeah. There's so many things, aren't there, that become our reference points, the things that we elevate. Nobody's mentioned children, but that's another thing. You know, everything gets tied around that, around nuclear family. Okay? Right. We've got these varying agendas. I think we've mentioned this, but somebody who we've had visit here put up a series of blogs not so long ago at the reaction he had when he told people in the sports clubs that, no, my kids will not be able to turn up every Sunday because we think that church is just as important as sport. Hands thrown up in horror. Could that happen? What can be more important than your children doing their thing when they want to? Yeah? So, another example of idolatry. Of course, stuff is the biggest idolatry we have. And it doesn't matter whether you've got it or you haven't got it. Because if you've got it, then you want more stuff, or you worry that you can't think of anything to buy. It's one of the things I dislike about birthdays, having to come up with a birthday list. You know? I have the problem. Do you know, I put socks on my list. I put classy socks, not stupid ones. Yeah. The stuff is a real problem. The point is, the more stuff you get, you reach a point where you only want very expensive stuff. If I had to put down a list of things above 500 quid that I wanted, I could make a really good list. 10,000 quid, even better. So, all those things become idols. Right, here's a question, guys. What's your idol? What's the thing that you exalt above God? What's the thing you think about and you think, I would really like that, to the extent that it pushes you off praising God? We've all got them. Yeah. Okay. Have a think about that. Yeah. Every day I will praise you and extol your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. One generation commends your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts. That's almost my last point here. One generation tells another of your mighty acts. How much time do you put into telling the next generation about the goodness and greatness of God? Do you tell people about miracles you've heard of? Things you've seen that are exceptional? Things that God has done? I remember when this happened. I remember when you were little and you were sick. Or you were ill. And we prayed for you. And God healed you. And do you remember about this other time? One of the stories in our family was how God provided for us to go on holiday. For quite a long time. quite a number of years. It became stories that were told. It's one of the aspects of knowing the greatness of God. Now, here we go. What's the takeaway? 12 o'clock, good time to get to what we're going to take away today. You come across this thing you get sometimes, which is good at distancing from us, distance in the Old Testament from us. May those who say to me, aha, aha. It's very childish, isn't it? It's like, na, 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 na. Much that way. I can remember the first time I was in Zimbabwe, I was up in the north by the coalfields, and you get different areas. And one of the things that happens there is that if you're honouring somebody, I don't know whether you ever saw this, but this was being out in the market on a Saturday with one of the senior pastors, people would clap. Did you ever see that happening? Yeah, as they came past. And it was a way of greeting somebody that you honour. I spoke about this on the Sunday and said how much it had amused me, because in the Psalms it talks about the Lord clapping his hands at people, which is a way of insulting them. And of course that was rather amusing, because often the people who get clapped are not the ones who deserve to be clapped in that. So the aha, every culture has the way of showing disdain, right? So read it like this: may those who disdain me, who think I'm stupid, who think I don't count, turn back because of their shame. Now there's a theme of vindication, of at the end of the day being proved right, that comes through in the Psalms. And the days when I find that becomes an overwhelming thing, I sometimes have to go back and say, well, what if my desire for vindication is legitimate? Vindication, that's been proved right, yeah. And what's not? But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who long for your saving help always say, the Lord is great. Okay? But as for me, I'm poor and needy. Come quickly to me, O God. You're my help and my deliverer. Lord, do not delay. It's almost the same in Psalm 70, which I've taken it from, and in Psalm 40 as well. But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who long for your saving help always say, the Lord is great. Now, that's the problem, isn't it? Because our tendency to say is, I've got a problem. Okay? How are you doing today? I've got a problem. How are you doing today? The Lord is great. I'm rejoicing in God. Now, guys, one of the reasons that I have not been able to develop the theme that I want to over this couple of weeks, I'm going to get there and I'm going to come back to it, is because I've really been struggling with this. I have found that I've gone through a period, and I don't know whether it's due to seasonal affective disorder or just I'm a miserable so-and-so, or that there are lots of problems around anyway, but I've found myself preoccupied with my problems rather than preoccupied with the greatness of God. Right? I'm probably the only one who does that. Because I know it's stupid. And that no sensible person, no person who knows in theory that God is great, would ever be preoccupied with their problems rather than the goodness of God. Doesn't make any sense at all. If I'm preoccupied with the goodness of God, then inevitably I'm going to be able to address these issues. Right? Whatever the newspapers say. Whatever the difficulties are. Let me just give you the stupidest example from this weekend. Friday afternoon, Wendy said, the outdoor tap's not working. Right? And I thought, stupid woman. She hasn't turned it on properly. And I went out, and sure enough, it doesn't take long with your average tap that's outside for the components to come undone inside. And it just was shot. And I've set it all up for a routine, you know, for dealing like this. And just behind the tumbler dryer is a stopcock. And I went in and I turned the stopcock, and the stopcock wouldn't move. All right. So that's the next thing that happens. So suddenly, the burdens of this situation begin to sit on me heavily. I have got to resolve this problem. And I can tell you just about everything that could possibly go wrong in replacing this tap. And those things are many. Now, those of you who just call a plumber, right, you would be okay with this. But my wife in particular considers that my calling somebody else out to do a job that I could do is a sign of effeminacy and deterioration on my part, and that I didn't used to be like that, and it's a waste of money. And what am I, a man or a mouse, you see? So all this stuff's in there. Stupid thing. And would you believe this is a tap? And of course we've got a landscape gardener coming to do some jobs in the garden on Monday, so it's got to be done for then. Stupid thing is, at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, I'm awake worrying about how I'm going to resolve this tap issue. 7:15, I'm out of bed checking that at least I can turn the main stopcock off. Yeah? At 9:30, I get back from B&Q. And 9:45, I've replaced the tap. Yeah? Waste of time. Now, I know none of you ever get into a state over things like that. But during that period, my ability to declare the greatness of God was lost. And I'd really be interested to find out whether any of you can find points during this week where it would actually help you to declare the greatness of God in your situation, where your survival is threatened, where we did say relationships we put on here. Where you're attempting something, where you've got goals that don't seem to be easily worked out, where there are other ways of living life that are offered, where there are issues of survival, having enough money when your mortgage is, once your mortgage is paid off, then you've got a problem with pension. You haven't got enough pension. As I've said sometimes before, church planting and a good pension do not go together. It can be a preoccupation. Where the issue of security and safety, where you feel threatened, whether it's rats in the loft or the fact that you've got teenagers making a noise outside your house, you know, all those things can be problematic. What will I say? I will say, the Lord is great. I will say, great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. Right. We haven't got time to do it. I was going to get us to read through all those. What I'll do is we'll post one of those references each day this week via Tumblr, Dave, and let's see if we can get them up onto Facebook and the other places so that you can just be reminded of them. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. Quick word of prayer, and that's enough for today. Father God, we do believe that you are great, that you're above all gods, that you're in control. We want to praise you. We want to give you thanks. We don't want to be listening to stories that get us down and make us forget. But Lord, we're weak people. We are poor and we are needy. And Father, we pray that by your grace, as we come to the throne of grace, that you will help us and you will stir us to recognize you for who you are, and that we'll find ourselves singing songs, whether they're in tune or out of tune, whether they're old or they're new, which put you in the right place. Amen. 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 That's it.